So this patient has had a pulmonary embolism. So she just had a seizure. She's been in hospital, probably immobilized slash sedentary, and she's had acute onset shortness of breath and tachycardia. That's the classic presentation for pulmonary embolism, especially in this setting. So they tell you the heart rate's 110, their spiritual rate's 24. And had they told you an ECG here, they would have just said sinus tachycardia. Okay, that's the most common ECG finding. There's a weird finding called S1Q3T3. Students tend to remember that as associated with pulmonary embolism, but it's the wrong answer. I just tell you that here as an important negative. You need to know that if the question ever asks you what are you most likely to see on an ECG in pulmonary embolism, answer is just simply sinus tachycardia. Now, they can also say the ECG is normal, and you're like, wait, I thought it was supposed to say sinus tachycardia. If you have a high heart rate and a normal ECG, that's just the same thing as sinus tachycardia. Okay, so that's your heads up on that. And here, there's pleuritic pain, just some pain on the left side. The question doesn't have to mention that. It's just plus or minus, very non-specific finding. CT angiography confirms the diagnosis. So that's just simply how we diagnose pulmonary embolism most of the time. That's also known as spiral CT of the chest. If this patient were pregnant, clearly she's postpartum. But had she been pregnant, we would have done a ventilation perfusion scan, a VQ scan, instead of the CT, just to reduce her radiation exposure. Now we look at her arterial blood gases. Now this is a lengthy discussion in and of itself, but here she has an acute respiratory alkalosis. So she has a high pH of 7.47, normal range of 7.35 to 7.45. Her PCO2 is low at 28 millimeters of mercury. The normal range is 33 to 44, and her O2 is low at 60. Normal range is 80 to 100, but ideally close to 100. And the reason for the low CO2 is because CO2 diffuses quickly. So even if you have lung pathology, if you have a high respiratory rate, your CO2 will be low, not high. So in pulmonary embolism, when you're breathing quickly, you have a low CO2, not a high CO2. And this is the same for acute asthma attack. You know, you're wheezing, the respiratory rate will be very high, and CO2 is low, not high. And that's confusing for students because you would think your CO2 would be high. But once again, CO2 diffuses quickly. So as long as you're breathing quickly, your CO2 will be low. If you're hypoventilating, if your respiratory rate is low, then in turn, your CO2 will be high. Now, O2 is low because O2 diffuses slowly, so you need healthy lung for your O2 to be normal levels in the arterial circulation. Long discussion we can go on that front, but I'll just stay more focused on the question here. This comes down to dead space versus shunt. The answer here is dead space. Dead space for USMLE, that's going to equal pulmonary embolism in a pathologic sense, okay? It's when our VQ ratio is high. So V over Q, ventilation over perfusion, we have a high VQ mismatch. And if we have an embolus blocking off part of the pulmonary circulation, our Q is going to be low, right? So our perfusion's low. So we have areas of lung that are ventilated but are not being perfused. So that's called dead space. In contrast, shunt, it refers to all other conditions. It's when you've got asthma, COPD, fibrosis, okay, and in turn, low oxygenation, and it's when we have a low V on Q. So even though your perfusion of the lungs is completely normal, areas of lung are blocked off from having adequate ventilation. So shunt equals low V on Q equals majority of pulmonary pathologies. In contrast, dead space equals high V on Q equals pulmonary embolism. Long discussion we can go on that front. I've discussed dead space versus shunt in some of the other questions, but I just want to stay concise here. We could literally do a 90-minute presentation on all this stuff. Choice B, wrong answer, diffusion impairment. There's nothing wrong with the gas exchange here. There's no physical impairment. Diffusion impairment would be the answer if they told you history of radiation to the chest or if they mentioned pulmonary fibrosis, okay? Pleuridynia, that's just a distractor. When students aren't sure of an answer, they tend to choose weird things. Pleuridynia is an answer that shows up on the family medicine 2CK shelf. It actually has nothing to do with the lungs. It's a musculoskeletal condition. It's when you have a viral infection causing lateral chest pain, sharp lateral chest pain, due to intercostal muscle spasm, and your creatine kinase can be elevated due to the muscle spasm. Yeah, weird sounding answer. Everyone gets that wrong on the family medicine shelf as well, because it's just who's heard of that prior. But I just mentioned that here as a distractor. Ruptured subapical bleb. That's the answer for spontaneous pneumothorax in a tall, lanky individual. Classically, Marfan syndrome, or let's say basketball player, volleyball player. They might mention the patient also uses cocaine. So that would be, as I said, 6'5", acute onset shortness of breath, ipsilateral tracheal deviation. That's your typical scenario for spontaneous pneumothorax, where ruptured subapical bleb is the answer. So that's pretty much it here. See if there's anything else I want to mention. Okay, that's it.